That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Oh, no tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
Fairly alarmed here.
Welcome to MOTN Reviews, that is Masters of the Nerdiverse Reviews, where we always check out the shiniest cinematic supernovas and some that are not so brightly lit. You can find this quantum realm of a podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and newly Spotify. The Dormammu-like lords of Spotify has deemed us worthy to join their ranks. And I am, for one, happy of our new Spectrum Overlords, and we'll go from there. I'm, of course, your host, Mike G, and back on the show is Beer Business Bureau's own Darren. How you been, man?
Good, man. Good. Just doing a lot of stuff and things.
Stuff and things. That's how I roll, too, man. You gotta balance them out.
Yeah. I haven't uploaded in a while. I am actually going to upload this week because I have a new Woot Stout and I have a shirt on actually today, too.
Yo, that Woot Stout boys.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's really good stuff this year, too. So they brought a lot of heat. Well, I mean, a lot of swag with this beer. I shouldn't have, damn it, why did I say swag? Anyway, let's continue.
No, we just got to dab on them now.
No.
You got to do that.
Not that they would see it anyway.
No, they would love it. They would. I get the idea that the Stone Brewery guys are pretty cool, especially that they didn't chew my head off after I said that the gargoyle was a Krampus and had the whole Stone Brewery nation come at me.
I'm actually surprised they responded so quickly.
They responded
super quickly, man.
I've been really practicing like my Twitter etiquette and how to like contact people. I've been getting some weird responses from people that shouldn't be talking to me. like I don't get it. Like I'm getting likes from like Brian Michael Bendis and
News what?
And
Wait, stuff. What?
Yeah,
what?
It's crazy stuff, man. Like I have a hang for like either irritating or titillizing people in positions at these on their social media teams of these companies, but. Yeah, that's MOTN getting out there, though. So,
speaking of which, RIP, creator Spider-Man.
Oh, Steve Ditko.
Yeah.
And RIP, John Schnepp from Collider passed away today.
Yeah.
Or today. It was announced that he passed away today. He had a massive stroke like a couple of days ago.
Oh, damn. I didn't even know that.
He just couldn't make it. So all us fellow sweaties don't want to date this episode too much, but, you know, got to give respect where respect's due. Speaking of Ditko, I wouldn't say he had a hand in creating the character we're talking about today. We're reviewing the 2018 classic, mind you. Unless we're watching the 70s footage that this movie loves to play around with. We are actually going to be reviewing 2018's directed by Peyton Reed.
Ant-Man and Wasp.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Marvel's own Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Technically times two.
Times two. Electric Boogaloo. Mm-hmm. You get twice as many insects for you entomology majors. Gotta love how I love how people try to break down what kind of ant he is. Like he's not technically.
It doesn't matter. Why would it matter? He's not. You're not trying to figure out what kind of spider Spider-Man is.
No, people really try to. It's so like stupid. People have written written papers. Spider-Man technically would be a jumping spider because how high he can jump. I'm like no, it's just a man.
Yeah, but spiders also don't swing.
Right, they fly. They fly. Yeah. He would be able to fly more than he would be able to swing, exactly. Technically. Because have you ever seen those pictures of those like hillsides in Australia or like Finland, where it's like miles upon miles of webbing?
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine waking up to your house and you're just like in Kingdom of the Spiders?
My brother would have a heart attack.
A conniption fit, huh?
He hates spiders, but he loves Spider-Man.
I hate ants, but I still like this movie and I still like this character. Man, so what's your experience in history with Hank Pym, Janet Van Dyne, Hope Van Dyne is technically a new character.
Yeah.
And for some reason I'm blanking on our main character's name. The the
Scott Lang.
Scott Lang, yes. And his daughter Cassie Lang. What's your experience with these characters?
So Hank Pym, that era of Ant-Man and Goliath, and I'm more familiar with him when he was with the Avengers.
Yes.
And when he went kind of psycho.
Yes.
And when he backhanded his own wife and
yes.
Yeah, and all that craziness. So that's what I'm really familiar with. That era of Hank Pym was a little
trippy.
Trippy, graphic. Well, I mean, graphic for what it was worth.
Mm-hmm.
But and it is kind of shocking a little bit. And then this one, in this film, in both films,
right.
It's the older Hank Pym, because obviously his character wouldn't translate as well in right. modern times, which I understand. That's fine, totally fine. So,
and it's funny that one thing I do love about this movie that most Marvel doesn't get right is lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And like you were mentioning earlier with the torrid history of Hank Pym, there's still room for that, technically.
Yeah.
If they really want to go down that dark road, kind of like how they played with Tony Stark's alcoholism
mm-hmm.
and Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
But in where this movie kind of sits now, it doesn't really feel, it will feel out of place.
It would be a spinoff. It wouldn't be related to the current MCU timeline at all.
Yeah, because it just wouldn't fit. Like,
no.
This movie kind of does dictate that Pym is indeed a bit of a braggart, mm-hmm. or kind of full of himself.
Yeah,
kind of Stark-esque.
He's got hubris. Well, he's arrogant. He doesn't have hubris.
Right. That which is good.
Yeah.
Because Stark has hubris, funny enough. But Pym has a bit of wherewithal.
Yeah.
To kind of keep himself under the radar. Even when the Avengers and stuff was going on, he was still under the radar.
Yeah.
And my experience with this character is, like you said, is mostly back in the day with the comics. Because Ant-Man didn't get a lot of play in the cartoons. And really didn't get any play until, like, remember the Avengers cartoon back mm-hmm. in the 90s?
Mm-hmm.
Where it was that weird cartoon where Iron Man, Captain America, or Thor were not part of the Avengers lineup.
Yeah.
It was like a weird hodgepodge of characters that are well known now. Mm-hmm. It was Tigra, I think, was one of them.
Yeah.
Vision was on the team.
Yeah.
Ant-Man, sometimes the Wasp. I think Black Widow. Was Black Widow there? I don't remember. It was a bunch of C-list Marvel characters.
I don't quote me on that, but I do remember when they were fighting T'Challa.
Yes.
That was funny. That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
Because he just mollywopped. He's a team clearer, isn't he? Put him first on when you're playing Marvel. He'll take care of the first two guys easy. And you will think something as edgy as like spousal abuse mm-hmm. or... and this is around the time he created Ultron.
Yeah, exactly.
And I need to state that for a fact.
Exactly.
Tony Stark did not create Ultron.
Right.
Hank Pym.
It wasn't Tony Stark's consciousness.
No, it had nothing to do with Ultron
whatsoever.
So
Hank made Ultron as a kind of like a make good
exactly
for what happened with the Avengers and how he got kicked out and how he was put in prison. I think what was it the Shield prison.
He was put like at the raft or something like that.
Yes, that's what it was. Yeah,
and Ant-Man has had such a messed up history in Marvel Comics from all of his alternate, personas, his villainous Yellow Jacket, which we may see in the future. We don't know. But the character as it's depicted in these films is a different character than what we've come to know in the comics, which comes to play into lineage and the mantle of the Ant-Man has existed back in the 70s or in the 80s, and now with Scott Lang, and even there's even hints to it in this film to his daughter, mm-hmm. who is Stature in the comics. She becomes a little hero of her own as part of the Young Avengers. And this movie really plays with lineage
mm-hmm.
from how it opens to its main MacGuffin to the end, to the absolute end. So let's get into that. Let's get into this film and how it starts. And how it really freaked me out when I first saw it. And it starts in 1987
mm-hmm.
with Janet Van Dyne, I guess, about to go on her final mission. And the facial recognition technology they're getting for this is starting to freak me out. like legit. Like it was just Michelle. It was like a young Michelle Pfeiffer out of Scarface. It was really not. No. She was older than Scarface. Maybe like Witches of Eastwick kind of era of Michelle Pfeiffer. But it was spot on. Mm-hmm. Like the actress did the mannerisms and the facial expressions, but they just de-aged her. As well as Michael Douglas. And I'm like, there's going to get to a point where as long as the actor knows the mannerisms, you can just recreate anyone. You want Michael Jackson in a movie? You can just have him there.
I mean.
It's crazy, dude.
They're going to de-age Samuel Jackson.
And for the whole film.
Yeah.
For Captain Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just really bothers me. Like, that's so weird. I don't like it. It was so real, I didn't like it. I couldn't see the thread of Uncanny Valley and what was going on.
Okay. But. You gotta admit, and I hate to open up old wounds, but Terminator Salvation.
I mean, we've come a long way. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is, like, back then, like I thought that was definitely Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
And looking back at it now, it's garbage.
It's garbage. It looks like
straight hot garbage.
Even going back to the original Ant-Man movie.
Yeah.
With Michael Douglas's face, you could still see that. Or even remember Tron Legacy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
with Jeff Bridges. Jeff
Bridges, yeah.
There was such an uncanny valley there, but now it's seamless. I was looking for. I was like, okay, I know this isn't right because this isn't 1985, and I'm not 0 years old, right?
Yeah.
So why does she look so perfect? Douglas looked okay, but they had some really tight shots on her face. Mm-hmm. It looked like a human being, like it was her daughter or something. That jarred me for the first 10 minutes of the movie. I couldn't handle it. It was too real. It was too strong.
Even more than Grand Moff Tarkin.
Oh, Grand Moff Tarkin. That's another thing. Mm. Grand Moff Tarkin and Princess Leia, you know, Carrie Fisher, Lord rest her soul. Yeah. That wasn't that far away. And you can see a quantic jump in graphic fidelity between those two movies. And they're what, 2 years apart? At most, a year apart?
Just about a year apart. Yeah, about a year and a half apart.
Right?
Yeah, Rogue One.
It trips me out, and it does it again later, and it bothered me then because I was just getting over it, and it hit me again, and I'm just like, oh, I don't like it. I don't like it. So they never explain what this mission is. It could be Hydra. It could just be the Soviet missile crisis going on.
Yeah.
They never really explain it, but there's a
monologue. Probably not the Cuban Missile Crisis. That was in the 60s. So I don't know what. Yeah.
It could have been anything. Yeah. Like, it could have been some unknown black op that we never knew about. Or their role. And it makes me really want a 70s Avengers movie because you can have Chris Hemsworth in it because Thor is ageless.
Right.
But then again, it doesn't explain how he
can, right. It doesn't explain how he would join
that team.
Yeah.
It would have to be Odin or someone like that. But you can just do that. You can have all the old guys come back as young. You can have Howard Stark. You can have Peggy Carter there. It would be kind of cool. But I digress. So they kind of do a recap of the first movie with Janet going into the going so subatomic because the actual plating on the missile was so tight that they couldn't break into it
with their little
baby ant hands.
Yeah.
So she had to go super subatomic, and there was always a great risk of being lost in that realm because it's so topsy-turvy. Mm-hmm. And the way they portray the quantum realm is something like I haven't seen in a very long time.
Actually, it reminded me a little bit of Doctor Strange.
Yes, yes, I was going to make that.
but way less acid trippy ish.
Right, it's way less. Is that like your fingers growing fingers? Yeah. Growing fingers kind of moment. Which Doctor Strange, gotta love Scott Derrickson because I'm sure that was his idea.
Yeah.
And it's just really pretty. It's like something you would see in Willy Wonka. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're kind of like, oh, yeah, we're just – everyone believes that Janet's dead, but Hope and, of course, Dr. Pym. And from there, you know, we see that they've been working on this entire time, you know, because of the Sokovia Accords, because of stupid Scott.
Yeah.
They're in so facto guilty of the same crimes he was guilty of, so that they're on the run now. Which kind of goes back into the torrid history of the Pyms. They're always kind of on the wrong side of things, even within the own Avengers team. So they're on the run from the ipso facto FBI because there isn't any real super service that exists at this point because S.H.I.E.L.D. no longer exists because of the Winter Soldier Hydra thing. So there's no real super group out there. Our government company that really handles superheroes on that kind of level. And Dr. Pym and Hope are just eluding these guys like it's nothing. And then we kind of find out what's been going on with Scott this whole time and how much time has passed.
Right.
And apparently between I kind of want to hold it to the end, but between current events and Civil War,
yeah.
It's been 2 years. So that kind of makes me think, going back to Infinity War, Spider-Man's been Spider-Man for 2 years.
Yeah.
At the point of Infinity War.
But it's also good to note that in Civil War, he was already on house arrest.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
They had to break him out of house arrest.
Yeah.
You know what? That's true. Because they had to go get him, right? So we go back to Scott. And he's built, I'm sorry, this crazy Pee Wee Herman level adventure cave for his daughter. It's just the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. There's a lot of things about this movie that is such a breath of fresh air from the gut punch that Marvel just gave us. And part of it is the whimsy between him and his daughter. I think that Paul Rudd really did a fantastic job.
I love Paul Rudd. He's awesome.
He's a treasure, man. Yeah. Like, he's a guy I would just want to have a beer with. and would just crack up the entire night. He seems like such a cool guy. And he's built this crazy, like, catacomb that he's built with his daughter that has, like, spirit guides and all types of nutty stuff. It's so cool. It is all out of his house, and it seems impossible. It reminds me of, like, 90s family films, like Home Alone, and you know what I'm saying? Like, that kind of genre. And you come to find out that he's been a house arrest this entire time. The FBI seemed to come by his house every other day just to make sure, because he's literally a superhero high, probably public enemy number, what, 4 or 5, probably behind Captain America and all the other Sokovia Accord breakers. And he's been trying to live his life. He's like, I'm really done with that life. I know I haven't seen Janet or Dr. Pym this entire time. I'm just trying to chill at the house until you guys can let me go outside. And there's a new character, kind of the FBI agent, who's kind of funny. I want to kind of give him a shout out because I think for the role he had, he kind of killed it.
Yeah.
And you come to find out that he's been running like a little security company with all of his boys from the first movie. Now, my only big gripe about this movie is it had a little too much Michael Peña, in my opinion. He was starting to wear on me a little bit.
His personality is not something that I can take for a long time.
Exactly. Exactly. It's kind of like, I get it. He's the comic relief, and that's necessary for a family film. But a lot of that should have came from Paul Rudd, in my opinion. And a lot of times, Michael was, that's his name, right? Michael Peña, I believe.
Yeah.
He was stealing scenes from Paul. And
well, okay. Actually, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
Yeah.
So, like, the whole thing with this movie, too, if you haven't seen it yet, is that it's Ant-Man and the Wasp, but one of the things that you'll notice is that it's more or less just the Wasp.
Yes, this is her movie.
Yeah, it's really her movie. And, like, Ant-Man kind of takes a seat back, even with his own supporting characters, which is kind of strange.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it's really, now that you make a great point. It's really Hope's movie. The MacGuffin of the movie is Hope's MacGuffin. And they kind of bring Scott along for the ride, literally. Again. Because what really kicks off this film is that they're ready to test the quantic realm kind of weird voyage at the bottom of the sea tunnel, which I love. I love that it feels – I know it's CG. But it just looks so real, and it looks fun, and this movie has a real whimsy about it.
Yeah, it's almost like a quantum super collider.
Exactly.
Which is weird as hell. But anyway, continuing
on. No problem. Yeah. It's Hope's movie, and I'm a huge fan of the Wasp ever since I was a kid, because I thought she was the cool little quirky addition to the Avengers. Mind you, in a perfect world, it would have been Wasp in the first Avengers movie and not Black Widow.
Yeah.
Because canonically, the Wasp is a founding member of the Avengers. Mm-hmm. Before a lot of the people on that team, before Hawkeye, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. On some levels, before Cap. She was an Avenger before Captain America was. And for her finally to get her shine, even though she's a smaller, literally a smaller character than the rest of the Avengers, I think she still holds her place in history as one of the best female heroes of all time who've never wavered. You know what I mean? She's never had stupid arcs or, a turn to the dark side. She's always just
been pretty cool consistent. Janet. She's been really consistent in the comics.
And to see her do cool things in this movie as a trained operative, kind of, all these people are just pretty much secret agents with powers. And so you see that Born identity feel to the tactileness of the action mixed with superhero fancy. And pretty much the whole point of this film is to go into the quantum realm to find Janet Van Dyne because they feel like they can do it. They've been working on this whole time in their giant Mattel playset of a office building that they go and snatch Scott because they feel that he has the key to do the final fixes to their machine to make it work. And there is a character actor who I love that plays kind of one of the villains of the film, but he's so wasted. He just feels really wasted in this movie. And he's kind of like the arms dealer. Mm-hmm. It would have been cool it would have been a nice little send-off if it was actually Justine Hammer played by, if they would have got him back to play as that character from Iron Man 2.
Right.
I know he's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking?
What you're talking about.
He was in Hitchhiker's Guide. Yeah. He would have been a cool fit-in for that. Because it goes back to old MCU, but the guy who's who was in Predators, I can't remember the actor's name. That guy's hilarious.
Yeah,
because he loves 5 o'clock. Ugh, I'm not going to say anything more about that joke. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't think of his actual name, but anyway,
he seems that whole thing could have. It's the potted plant of the movie where if you just take him out, it doesn't affect the story all that much. Outside of the major, action sequences, which could be swapped out, but apparently he has the piece that the piece of the puzzle that they need to get this thing working, and Hope goes to kind of pay for it because they just have infinite money for some reason. It's the Fantastic Four effect where it's
I get it.
Reed holds patents and stuff, but how does he just have infinite money to make all this fantastic stuff?
Yeah, it never made sense. But because the patents, the patent system is a long, grueling, and disgusting process.
Yes.
It takes many decades for you to actually get awarded. That's why you see a lot of stuff that has patents is patent pending.
Yes.
And you're not really getting any money on the patent
at all until it's in commercial distribution, right? So it's like patent pending doesn't mean that the patent that you have it just means
it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything.
It's like a feel good title.
Oh, it's super a big plot hole. I'm like, how do they have just hundreds of millions of dollars of quantum accelerators and they're on the run? Like, you're not making any legal deals anyway.
I'm sure they stole it.
She ended up selling it because the guy was like, he was giving her, he changed the deal.
Well, I meant the cash. They probably didn't.
I mean, you think they wouldn't be above that?
I mean, how at this point? They're already technically de facto criminals.
It's not like he can ask Stark.
Yeah.
And everybody else on the Avengers is broke but Stark. Who are they going to ask? Nobody likes Scott. They all just find him as an irritant, which I love. So we got to see the Wasp in action for the first time. And she's whizzing around and she's doing all her fun kicks and small to big. They do that a lot. I really wish they would have done her patented move where she flies in the ear canal and zaps your brain a bunch. She does it to the Hulk a ton of times. Yeah. And you're like, get out of my head. But I guess they're probably going to hold that to Avengers 4 or something. But we get our first look at the villain, the main villain. I wouldn't even call her a villain. This whole movie is weird there's no true antagonist to this movie.
Well, okay, this is what I was afraid of before I saw the movie. And there's conflicting storylines, but just befuddled storylines.
Yeah.
And hers is the one that is really, really does not that it doesn't make sense, but it's just kind of thrown in there.
It's everything feels shoehorned outside of
she's super Janet's
motivation.
She's super shoehorned, and she's kind of taken almost out of thin air in a sense, because she doesn't even exist in the Ant-Man universe. She's an Iron Man villain. Yeah, she's an Iron Man villain. So like, it's really strange. But and also, Ghost is not a female. Ghost is a male.
Yes.
So that's the other thing. That's
another thing where it's like the mantle of Ghost is a thing that's played around with in the comics. There's multiple Ghosts,
right,
mind you. And yes, Ghost is a Iron Man villain, along with like Grey Gargoyle and the Living Laser.
Right.
Guys like that. She's a B-list Iron Man villain.
Yeah.
And I get it. Ant-Man is not clamoring for villains like a Flash or Batman is. But the change to sex, I don't care at this point. You know what
I'm saying? Yeah, I mean,
it's fine, because they're just going to make it up no matter what anyway.
Right. They've already made shit up anyway.
Exactly.
Especially with Thor and World War Hulk. And
all that stuff. We're all just playing it by ear.
Yeah.
But the character had no true motivation, because this is something she could have stolen at any point of history to get them where it almost seems kind of forced. Like, her motivation to get this piece is that she's in a race to do exactly what Pym and Janet are trying to do, which is get at Pym and Hope are trying to do is get Janet back.
Yeah.
How would they? I'm sure at some point in history, Hank Pym told certain people that Janet was in there, and her motivation could have been building this entire time along with
other people. You know,
does it make sense? Like, why steal it now? Why go after it now?
Well, they kind of explain that because her molecular disequilibrium.
And yes.
I'm not actually sure that's an actual
but it's a good
scientific term.
Yeah.
But
it's a good explanation of what the problem is.
But that still doesn't explain how she actually knew.
That's my point. how did she know when the deal was going? I get it. Like, okay, let's just talk about this character for a while, Ghost. Apparently her origin story, because she legit has an origin story in this movie, is that her father worked along with Hank Pym on the origins of molecular shrinking, pretty much going to some atomic and all that crazy stuff. He, from her eyes, was banished from the project and started doing his own thing. Hank would then tell, like, no, he was a war criminal and he was selling our secrets to the Reds and all that crazy stuff. But, of course, there's a lab explosion. She goes back to see how her father is, because this is her father who's been doing all this. And in the explosion, her cells are constantly in a state of flux where they're being destroyed and rebuilt constantly.
Yeah.
And she explains it as being torn apart and put back together again constantly.
Like over and over again, 24/7, nonstop.
Nonstop. That's why she has the ability to phase shift, and she has some minute control over it. It's almost like trying to flex a muscle. You can only hold that for so long before you have to let it go. It's the same kind of idea. So her MacGuffin, or her, I'm just keep saying that word until I get a t-shirt made. Her point is that I'm going to find Janet because chances are she soaked up so much quantic energy that I can extract that from her.
Right.
And it pretty much, it's the Fly.
Yeah.
Right? If I put someone else through the teleporter, then maybe their genes will replace my damaged genes. And I could be fine, and that person will just be screwed. It's pretty much her idea.
Yeah.
So that's why she's going after this doohickey, you know, science, the aluminum transfunctioner, as it were, from Dude, Where's My Car? And they don't know what to make of it. Hank Pym is like, what is that? You just get out of there. You're not going to win this fight.
Yeah.
Because she's very efficient at using her skills, because apparently she was trained by S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, she was trained by S.H.I.E.L.D. as an assassin.
As an assassin since she was born.
Right.
Probably Hydra. It's probably a little bit if you really want to.
Well, yeah. She said, yeah, exactly. So,
right.
But also the impetus for her to get to Janet was because her time was running out.
Yes, that's another foil to her storyline is that you have weeks, from my understanding.
I mean, that's just an estimate.
Yeah. So she has that spawn clock.
Yeah.
Every time you use your powers,
yeah,
you're kind of draining down. And so, you know, so that is a big giant fight scene. And how that kind of turns out is that they lose the part, right? Or is,
So the part was like, kind of like hot potato at some point, which is kind of annoying. That was the one part that I was kind of annoyed with, because it kind of reminded me of like, not again, like one of those 90s movies where where like everyone was trying to get something, like trying to get the ball, and like it comes up with some crazy, like a cartoon, actually.
It's like Snatch.
Yeah. Everybody's
after the diamond.
Exactly.
And everyone holds a diamond at least once at some point.
Yeah. It reminds me of Lox Talking to Smoking Barrels.
Yes.
That's what it reminds me of.
There's like, here's the, it doesn't matter at this point. We're all going to touch it at least once, but at the end, the true hero is going to have it.
And I mean, they're going through San Francisco.
Tearing through this town.
Just going through. And if you don't know, San Francisco is actually a pretty small place.
Yeah.
And so you can go from end to end in half a day.
Mm-hmm.
And they were scaling and they were spanning streets in like minutes. Like, what the? Like, but anyway,
that's movie magic.
One of my favorite scenes, though, actually, is when what's her name? Oh my gosh, the Van Dyne, small Van Dyne.
Hope
yeah. Van Dyne, where she shrinks the car and she's going down Lombard Street.
Yes,
that's my favorite.
Like kind of visual gag,
because it's kind of weird, but I've always wanted to know what it'd be like if an ant or some insect were riding a bicycle or a car and going down that street.
What the physics on that would be, right?
Yeah. So it was actually kind of cool, that part.
The chase scene was the diamond of this movie, honestly. It beat out the ending. It beat out the beginning. That car chase scene where it's something out of like The Italian Job. It just was so well directed. Something out of like Baby Driver, where they just kept playing with that. And the stakes kept changing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
From Captain Arms Dealer getting the playset, their apartment building / secret hideout, which is hiding in plain sight.
What did you used to call those things back in those big old toy houses? What were those called?
Jeez, I can't remember. I know there was like a Ninja Turtles one.
Yeah.
Where you just kind of open it up and it just becomes an entire diorama.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That goes to a part of the end of the movie that just makes me so mad when I talk about it when I get there.
I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about?
It's actually great.
It makes me mad because it doesn't exist and I can't just... We'll get there. They did that again in another movie and it pissed me off really bad. So Pim and the gang reluctantly go to, I guess, Cal State San Francisco or something, no-name college, and they go talk to Bill Foster, who, for comic heads know, is Goliath.
Right.
And he was a big comic book hero back in the 70s during the whole Hank Pym is in jail. We need a Ant-Man. And that one of Ant-Man's many monikers was the Goliath.
Right.
For when he would grow big and he would stay big. Versus him being Ant-Man. Because it kind of shifted. It went from, if he's molecular, he's Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's normal size, he's Yellowjacket.
Right.
But if he's big, he's Goliath. And his suit changes depending on what size he is.
Right.
It's kind of a crazy thing because Yellowjacket would shrink sometimes, but normally he was like, he was a regular size guy.
Right, he was average size, yeah.
He was just really good at fighting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we visit Bill Foster, who is played by Larry Fishburne. I refuse to call him Lawrence. You're Larry,
why?
Bro.
Why?
Because he was born Larry. That's what his mama named him. And then he got his SAG card, and now he's Lawrence. Whatever, man. We remember you when Pee Wee Herman. You were Cowboy Curtis, bro. You can't live that down, ever.
Or Cornbread.
Cornbread. Oh, jeez, let me get off his neck before he listens to the podcast, sends his assassins after me. So we find out that Bill Foster and Hank Pym kind of left on bad blood, and Hank Pym became a super awesome physicist, and Ben Foster ended up teaching at a college. Kind of sucky how that really would shake down that way in real life, funny enough. You know, and Hank gave him no credit for any of the help he did on Project Goliath. And they were like, okay, this is how I would fix it. Because it would be to Ben's benefit for them to work on it too. Because he's probably stymied on certain things that they're on point about,
right,
and vice versa. But the way this is set up, it makes me seem that Ben has had tabs on them the entire time. Because he's really up to date with what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you're right.
Given the other side of the equation.
Right. Especially if Hank's supposed to be in hiding.
Exactly. How? Yeah. Unless he's having, and we're just spoiling because we're going through the storyline. Apparently, Ghost has been working with Ben this entire time. Mm-hmm. Kind of as, he's kind of working as her handler in a way. Like, I know I'm just as smart as Pim is. I'll help fix you. We're building the exact same thing in our house, yeah, too. Yeah. And they live in this giant spooky house. It almost reminds me of, like, Scooby-Doo. It's a silly house. It even has, like, the owl noise when it comes up on it. Lightning strikes. Like, what is this? This is kind of stupid. Like,
yeah,
what?
it's like, way off in, like, the boonies. It's kind of weird.
He lives in the forest with her and her weird, like, sound deafening, like, sleep area so she can at least get a night's sleep.
Yeah, she had this chamber, I guess, which keeps her cells somewhat in order.
How does she wear clothes?
I don't know.
How does she eat?
But
I have a lot of questions, especially if she can't maintain any kind of molecular stability.
Yeah. It,
does she need to eat? How does she grow? How do bones? We're moving on. I'm asking stupid questions. So they find out that Ava went to this spooky house, and they're like, okay, she has the part, so we got to follow her, get the part, so we can get Janet out of the quantum realm, quantum leaping it up. And Ava gets the drop on them and kidnaps them.
She just restrains them.
Restrains them.
Yeah.
And Ava comes off as the most understandable character and honestly one of my favorite new villains. She's not a villain.
She has
a motivation.
She's
pain, yeah, really can motivate you, right, to do whatever it takes to make it stop.
Right.
She's like, we don't know if I do this, it will kill Janet, but I need to do it because I'm going to die.
Right.
And for my own self-preservation, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And to the point where she's like, you know what? I could just kidnap Scott's daughter.
Right.
That'll make him come around. And Ben, not a villain, is like, yeah, we can't go that route. Like, no, we're not going to do that. If you do that, I'm out. I'm super out. Like, that's crossing a line. And even Captain Arms Dealer is not a villain. He's just a businessman.
He's just a douche.
He's just an opportunistic business gangster. Yeah. And he's like, I want to make my money. He's not trying to destroy the world or anything. That's one thing that's both hinders and helps this movie, that there's no large stakes.
There's no, like, depth. Okay, it's great that it's eclectic, but it suffers where there needs to be some sort of black and white element. Yes,
there has to be some level of clarity.
Yeah,
and who we're supposed to be rooting for? Because honestly, I get
everybody. I
get everybody.
Yeah,
and it's like there's no conflict in this movie. Like, no one's ever in true danger outside of Ava. You know, she's the only one with her life on the line. Because worst case scenario, it doesn't work. And Hope just goes on with her life.
It's kind of like Super Smash Brothers with a storyline.
Exactly. It doesn't matter because you know Mario's not going to die. He's going to go out.
Yeah.
He's going to go lay down. At the end of the game, everybody's clapping. Everybody's like, good job. GG's. You know? This whole movie is a giant GG's. No matter how it shook down, everybody would have been like, we'll try again tomorrow. I just have to build the part again. Oh, it's so irritating. It bothers me. That's the one thing that bothers me is that this movie is so meh. You know, it's the safest.
Yeah.
It's the safest thing in the world. So they finally get the part because they do this crazy thing where there's this little thing of Tic Tacs that's in the movie. And Scott is like, can I get a Tic Tac? And Hank's like, no, you can't have one. And they make this weird thing. And there's a point where it's like, yeah, those are his heart pills. He has a bad ticker. And he's like, oh, my God, my heart. Oh, no. And they open it. And it's just a bunch of ants spring out in attack mode.
Yeah.
And they're, like, holding Ben down, which I thought he was going to go big, which is such a wasted opportunity. And there's the scene where Ben meets Ava for the first time because during her origin story. And they de-age Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
And it bothers me again. That's what I'm talking about. Like, I don't like it. It looks too real. Apparently, his son was the stand-in, Lawrence Fishburne's son. like so real life son.
I think I read that.
And they just didn't have to do much. They just touched up his own son's face, did a couple of things there. Kind of like how in that movie, The Nun, Vera, what's her name? The actress who plays The Nun in the original movies, in the Conjuring movies, her daughter is playing her in the remake, which is a prequel. But I think it's kind of funny. I think that's kind of cool when the kids can actually pull it off.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But we're getting to the climax of the film where everything's starting to come together. Hank, the plan is that Hank's going to go into the quantum realm and get Janet. The Ant-Man and the Wasp, in particular, have to protect him in the building while for enough time to get her out, because currently they're under FBI investigation. The arms dealer is out to pretty much get his property, not his property, but get their property. And of course, you have Ghost on their tail. Mm-hmm. So they have these three arcing kind of conflicts, almost like not even conflicts. They're more like obstacles.
It's like a rat race.
It's a rat race.
Yeah.
You ever seen that movie? It's a mad world. It's like that.
It's like that.
Where no one's really out to hurt anyone. It's just we have to get the MacGuffin. I'm sorry. It's just all it is. And we see Hank put on his Voyage of the Bottom of the Sea, kind of like lost in space, like proto Ant-Man armor.
Yeah.
It looks really cool. And it gives me like a Fantastic Four vibe. This whole movie teases Fantastic Four all the way through it. And not necessarily a guy on fire or a rock monster. Yeah. It's the fantasy of super duper science, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Going into different realms of existence using these giant sets and traveling machines. It almost reminds me, and remember that movie Innerspace?
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of that, where the guy's in like a little bubble when he's going through the human body and stuff like that. So we get to see the quantum realm, which would have been funny if you just saw like Dr. Strange just falling.
that would be great.
Pop, and he just goes into another dimension.
That would have been a great cameo.
Little cameo.
That would have been awesome. But it also wouldn't make sense.
Wouldn't make sense. Or I could just see him traveling. Yeah. Oh, hey guys, see you later. Because he just goes through these realms like you know, like opening doors.
Because he was going through realms, not through time.
Yes. Or was he? We don't.
Well,
they do a throwaway line at the end that plays with that. And and after seeing what's been leaked about Avengers 4 and what the actual end is, we'll talk about that. But the chase scene all through San Francisco, as you say, you know, miles into minutes, and Ant-Man literally going like 85 to 100 feet tall, which is more along the lines of how tall he is, can get in the comics.
Yeah.
And they play with that because he's like in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing, it doesn't look stupid where he's like 100, he looks like Godzilla, you know what I mean?
Right.
It still keeps him at a balance, which I think is smart, because if we just had him stand up in the streets at 100 feet tall, it would look kind of weird. And it also goes into that, how can Pacific Rim robots keep their weight under the street that's going to collapse into the sewage system and stuff?
So
they leave that part out, and everything works out, and it bothered. And that alone, there's no stakes to this. Like, Hank goes in, he finds Janet. She's fine. She's been eating like Triscuits or whatever. She's not even human at this point.
That's actually, I was thinking, okay, my theory with that, like how she actually survived and then, because I was thinking maybe she hunted the water bears or something.
Fine.
There's no other way.
The size of like buses. Like, how else? I would have loved it if she didn't age.
Right. Well,
if everything was like a blink of time to her.
But again, it
and then you get Janet Van Dyne as the Wasp.
Right.
If she didn't age, it would have made more sense.
Okay. So the thing with that is that it's just kind of segue, but this goes back to like physics and Einstein and theory of relativity.
Yeah.
And how certain things would actually have a the smaller you are, I think the shorter your lifespan is.
Yeah.
So technically, she should really be dead.
She should be dead in bones, amount of time, right?
With the amount of time that's passed, she should have been way dead.
Yeah, she should be like dust at this point, right?
But, you know,
movie's going to movie.
Yeah, exactly. Suspend disbelief.
Suspend the disbelief. She's been surviving on a bag of Triscuits that she shrunk down. That was a life-size supply that she just had on her for just a situation. They don't explain it. They don't bother explaining it.
Yeah.
They go back. No problem. It reminds me of The Core. Remember the movie The Core? Where they have to do that escape scene through the center of the Earth. But everything's fine. Engine's purring. They got the music playing. You know, he's saying, yeah, some stuff has changed upstairs. You know, you'll see. Like, we're kind of going through it right now. Scott doesn't really punch anything. It's a car scene. And, well, you can't punch Ghost because she's a ghost. So she's not really. And at the end, when the villain loses, she's not really punished. Yeah. She's actually given a gift.
Yeah.
Because Janet's been in the quantum realm for like 20 years at this point, she's not truly human anymore. She's some kind of...
Yeah, she explained that...
Very vaguely, mind you.
She explained that while in that realm, it's a type of evolution that she goes through for being down that, I guess it's accelerated evolution.
Yes.
And so somehow she gains the power to heal people.
And that's... And it's really unclear what her power is. Because she does a lot of different stuff. Because she heals his mind.
Right.
Right? She gets... Because he starts to lose it. Because the longer you're in the quantum realm, it's not meant for your mind to understand that level of reality.
But it doesn't make sense. Because she was stuck in shit from 30 years.
Maybe she lost it and got it back. It's been 20 years. Maybe the first five, she was as crazy as shit. And eventually she did like a Dr. Manhattan and brought it back together.
I don't know, man.
I'm just speculating because they don't tell us. They just tell us to roll with it. You know what I'm saying? Which bothers me. So we get to the climax of the film. Ghost is pretty much won because she's starting the process of sapping the energy from Janet. And Janet's like, oh, no, I'm in danger, but I'm not. And they just stop. They stop Ghost with kind of relative ease. And Janet's fine. Janet comes out. And Janet has this do ex machina, like, oh, I know what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
Come here. And she just fixes her.
I don't get that. That really, really, really bothered me. Mm-hmm. It's like, first of all, what else did you evolve?
What is her power?
Like foresight or like insight?
Is she just a Jedi at this point? Like, what exactly is going on with Janet?
Do you have X-ray vision or some shit? Like, I don't
Are we going to have to worry about you later as becoming like a threat to all life?
Yeah.
Has powers that are just unexplained, quantum powers. What does that mean? And how can you just... She altered Ghost on a molecular level. That means she has matter manipulation on some level. Because she did the same thing to Hank to fix his brain. So... Are we talking like Molecule Man levels? And for those who know who Molecule Man is, he's complicated as shit. And I don't want to go too deep into that. But they need to explain that, like, now. But they kind of, if they keep things the way they are, they won't have to.
But yeah. I mean, the way the movie ends, it's so
cookie cutter. It's so Scooby-Doo. It's so, you were the ghost the whole time. Everything's fine. And it's just like, no. Explain. Stop. Stop for a second. How'd she do that?
Right.
How was she cool with that? How was Hank okay with that?
Yeah.
You know, why?
I think at this point, it's his wife. I mean, like,
he's just happy to have her back.
Yeah, exactly.
Hope is just happy to have her back.
Yeah.
If it sounds like we skimmed over a lot of Scott stuff, it's because.
This is what I was saying earlier.
That's the nature of this movie.
He takes a big backseat.
He takes a huge backseat. Yeah. He has no true urgency in this movie.
Yeah.
Other than I need to get back to my house because I'm on house arrest.
Yeah.
You guys are going to mess this up for me. You know, his wife is not a conflict like she was in the first film with the new husband. They just love him. They can just eat him up. His daughter is never in any true danger. And unfortunately, Scott suffers in this movie because of his lack of urgency. Mm-hmm. He's just there to be Ant-Man because that's the titular character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So everything works out in the end.
But not really.
So Ghost, they're working on fixing Ghost permanently. Apparently that was a kind of a non-permanent fix. Ghost and Ben Foster just run away. You're just like, yeah, I've done stuff. You kind of probably don't need to be next to me, Ben. I'm probably going to go to super jail after they catch me. He's like, nah, I'm with you to the end. They run off into infinite to fight another day. Of course, the arms dealer gets caught by the truth serum, not truth serum, which I just skipped over because a lot of that Michael Pena stuff bothered me. If you want to get into it, it's fine. It's just jokes. I don't care about that. Doesn't really pertain to the storyline. Scott is off of
he's off of house arrest.
House arrest. Yeah. So he's good to do to really pursue his security business, which is fine.
Yeah.
Henry Pym has his wife back, which they show us that he's found because they're still on the run. Technically, they found a little island off of nowhere.
Yeah.
And pretty much shrunk his house, which I'm sure why they didn't notice that is the FBI is beyond me, or what they can do about it in any way. So they're living their best life, you know, living life like it's golden. And Scott gets to spend more time with his daughter, and the blooming love between Hope and Scott is kind of the end of the film. Like, they're she's not a damsel in distress, far from it. If anything, Hope is the star of the movie, and I think that the actress, what's her name, Lily?
Oh my gosh.
Evangeline Lilly?
Evangeline Lilly. I shouldn't know her name.
Yeah, she's from Lost.
Yes.
I think she did a good job in the role. And I want to see just a Wasp movie. Like, forget Ant-Man. I just want to see her buzzing around with the Avengers. It's what I've always wanted. I just want things to be closer to the comic. And now maybe we can get a scene with Cap. With Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Ant-Man, and the Wasp. Because that's the original. The legit original Avengers, like from the original story back way back when.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to think about. We finally got our Wasp, and she looks great, and the effects look great. So, and it's never been better. So let's talk about this ending stinger, which has some implications, has a lot of implications to what we can really look forward to going forward in Avengers 4. Which is the cap of 20 films and 10 years of filmmaking.
Insane. Absolutely crazy, man.
Talk about the long game.
Yeah.
And they did it.
And it's working.
It's worked.
It's working so far.
Avengers 4 could tank, and this will still be a successful endeavor.
It'd be kind of poetic if it did.
It would be very poetic. I would love it. And funny enough, I would unironically love it. Because if the comic book genre had to die with this movie, then so be it. We had a beautiful run.
Yeah.
But anywho, they've built a kind of portable quantum realm machine in the back of, I think his name's Hector. Is that the name of Michael Pena's character?
Oh, I can't remember.
I don't want to butcher it. He was too annoying. I tried blocking a lot of his character out. And they do this thing where Janet does a throwaway line like, okay, you're going to go back into quantum realm. Don't fall into a time vortex.
Right.
Because you can get lost in it forever.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that. But he's like, fine. He's like, whatever. I've done this a couple times. I kind of know it. So he goes into the quantum realm to get quantum energy because this is what they plan to use to permanently fix Ghost. And he's like, hey, guys, you can pull me out now. What's going on? Hey, guys. And you look and they're all Infinity War dust.
Yep.
All three of them, mind you. Which is kind of a weird cop out because you think if it was half the universe, at least one of them would be floating around.
Yeah.
It's like Thanos is like it's half the universe, but these heroes super have to die. You know,
It was him because even though he's in the subatomic realm,
yeah,
he's still in this universe.
Yeah, he's still within the universe, just on a different realm.
He made the cut
right out of the four, right?
But what's really messed up is that he made the cut and he's trapped in the cut.
Yeah, he's trapped in the cut. He's trapped in the quantum realm. And at this point, there's no one in the Marvel Universe who can save him.
Exactly. Except for Captain Marvel. But again,
we don't know the extent of her powers, but she doesn't.
But she wouldn't even know he was there anyway.
Because she wouldn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
And in the infinite sea of the quantum realm, let's say she's in there. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are speculating that Captain Marvel, this is where she's been the whole time. She's been stuck on a different realm of existence, like the chaos dimension or the quantum dimension or something like that. But that's just speculation. I don't want to go too deep into that. So we find out that this event And there's really no time frame on when this is happening. It could have happened a year after the end of this movie. I'm assuming they want to make it seem like it happened immediately after the end of this movie.
What do you mean?
On the roof testing out the portable quantum machine.
It had to have been happening the same exact time.
The same exact time.
As Infinity War.
True, because the two-year gap does add up. Because it was 2 years from Civil War in Avengers Infinity War, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure, because I was getting kind of hasty on that myself. But it begs a lot of questions. Like, Ant-Man is in promotional art for four, so he's going to be there. And honestly, Ant-Man would be kind of a problem because he's way more powerful than people give him credit for. If you think about it more than for 5 minutes, and it's like, how do you break out Scott Lang? And what kind of mental condition is he going to be in by the time somebody actually fishes him out?
Oh, yeah. So.
Right? Because, you know, he could just be completely batshit insane by the time they find him. But I doubt it because it's a movie. That'd be kind of cool if they did that, but I doubt it. And it's like, is the time vortex the way you beat a Thanos? Is that how you get rid of an Infinity Gauntlet? Are the Infinity Stones, for that matter? Is the time vortex going to be the Deus Ex Machina that they just toss him in and he does a Skeletor? He's gone forever in between time?
I don't think so.
It would be kind of a cop-out.
It wouldn't, well, okay.
And it wouldn't be exciting.
In order for that to work,
you have to get him there.
Yeah, and the only person that can get him there is Ant-Man at this point.
Yeah, because he would have to shrink him down to that level.
Yeah, and he would have to be able to get out, but nobody knows he's there. So it's really fucked up. Like, everything about it is fucked all the way up. It's like, when I saw that, I was like, bro, this is
super rough. Because it's like, okay, Doctor Strange can get him there, but he doesn't exist anymore. Not even,
exactly.
Wong maybe can save him. Maybe, because Wong knows how to walk between realms and stuff like that. But is he as proficient as it as a Doctor Strange? And he doesn't have the Eye of Agamotto, so he can't play with time in that funny sense. So it's like, how are they going to do this movie? How are they going to do Avengers 4? Because I'm scared. Like, I'm scared that they're going to pull it out their ass and it's not going to be a cohesive story. Because they've written themselves in a pretty
solid corner.
Just pull everybody's in there. There's a whole sea of people just in the Soul Stone chilling out. Makes sense. Gamora's there. Everybody's there.
Yeah,
if Gamora made it and she died outside of the Grand Culling, then everybody's there.
Yeah.
That sucks. That's kind of irritating. But then again, if she's there, there's a chance that Adam Warlock may be there. Shit, the Fantastic Four can be there. Papa John's can be in there. We don't know. At this point, it all doesn't matter. I just want... What is the Earth at this point? Is it just... The Earth is in peril. Gaia, the spirit of the Earth. Is everyone just losing their minds? Because we saw in the second stinger of the trailer, which was kind of silly, it was just the ant playing drums.
Yeah.
But you saw that there was the emergency broadcast system floating around.
Right.
And chaos was ensuing.
Yeah.
So... And from screenshots that have been taken of filming of Avengers 4, you see Ant-Man running around with an Avengers 1 era Captain America, Iron Man, and I think Hawkeye. So does – because Ant-Man in and to himself can get himself out because he did it in the first one.
Yeah.
He can figure out how to get himself out. But because he's in a time stream, does he spit himself out at a different stage in time? Because he wouldn't know what a Thanos is.
Right. I mean, okay. I don't remember. How did he get himself out in the first film?
He had this weird, like toy or something. It wasn't a toy. He had a button that he went in with him. And he got lost in there. And he pushed it. And it zipped him back into normal.
Okay, yeah, he doesn't have that with him.
No, but at this point, it probably built into the suit. I mean, why wouldn't it be?
Well, then why would they – well, even as a fail-safe?
That's a fail-safe. Yeah. Like, if you're in the quantum zone for this amount of time, this just activates and pulls you out no matter how long you've been in there, no matter where in the state of the suit is.
I would hope so because I – That would make sense. I honestly, like
– I can't see a way.
My gut just kind of, like, fell Yeah. Like, I was like, hold, dude, this is not right.
This is not right.
This is really like, messed
guys,
up.
Guys, he's in the worst possible way anyone in the Marvel Universe could be in right now. Because if you just dropped Captain America in the Quantum Zone, he's not coming out. That's it. He's hoping it up. You know, he better find some Triscuits or something.
Yeah.
Because he's done. He's fried chicken, dude. So Ant-Man has proven that he can escape out of it, but A, can he, and B, if he's in a time vortex, where does that put him?
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's very, very weird if it just spits him out at the exact beginning of the invasion.
That was Ant-Man,
knowing everything that's happened before.
But then...
And that's what it's looking like they're going to do.
So if that's the case, then what would be the purpose of summoning Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel's there to take care of the everyday now. So time...
Oh, I see. Okay.
Time changes,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
Let's say, for hypothetically, Scott spits out at the beginning of Avengers 1, right? Which is the invasion. He's a founding member of the Avengers now, right? He grows up with them through all of the events of Avengers... Age of Ultron, all the way up into Infinity War, where they're prepared for what's going to happen. Captain Marvel shows up like nothing's happened because she doesn't affect, you know, she's technically not going to affect anything that happens on Earth at this point because she's MIA. By the time she gets there, the Avengers are more powerful than ever, ready for this threat that they call her for immediately. So this is what could happen. I doubt it's going to happen this way, but it would make sense. That it will put Ant-Man and the Wasp as founding members of the Avengers, where they're supposed to be. Who knows what happened in that time frame? So the Fantastic Four could show up, mutants could show up, all types of stuff could happen. And by the time you get to Captain Marvel, Avengers 4, time has changed because Scott went back in time to alter the future so that the finger snap never happens.
Still think it's a Soul Stone.
Don't get me wrong. That's a very... That is the Murphy's Law of this whole conversation is that it's the Soul Stone. It's super the Soul Stone. They're all in there, and the Shepherd's going to be Adam Warlock, maybe, fingers crossed, and he's gonna get them out of it. They're going to pop out and have that big old fight.
I mean, you're giving the MCU writing a little more credit than
more
what
credit than they're due. And
that'd be awesome. That would be really good.
I'm giving the common theater goer more credit than that because they wouldn't get it. What? It's the Soul Stone, right? They want people to feel smart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's going to be the Soul Stone. Captain Marvel's going to find Thanos on his weird farm planet. Give me that. No. She's going to thump it 3 times. They're going to come out like a genie bottle.
You know what I was thinking, though, which I would actually prefer since they already messed up World War Hulk. I was thinking that somehow... they could piss off the Hulk enough to turn him to Worldbreaker Hulk. Take him to Titan.
Yeah.
Fuck up his entire planet with just one footstep.
Yeah.
And then...
You know what? They're playing with that, actually. Because did you see that leaked image of like them in new suits and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
There is something that looks dangerously close to Professor-level Hulk, where he has the intelligence of Banner, but the size of Hulk. Worldbreaker, but then Worldbreaker is like the problem because then you have to deal with Worldbreaker.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
He hates everything, and you just set him down like the atom bomb he is to take out Thanos, but you still have a Hulkbreaker problem at the end of that, which is probably on some levels minus the Infinity Gauntlet a bigger problem.
Right.
Because he can take down the Avengers all by himself.
Right. Captain Marvel.
How powerful.
Who can take the place of Sentry.
How powerful they're going to make Captain Marvel?
I mean,
stupid powerful.
I mean, this is why I said that anyway. It's because there is a fan theory that actually kind of makes a little bit of sense.
Okay.
Because again, they've already messed up the timeline, and the fact that Hulk won't come out,
mm-hmm.
and there's an even better theory about why he won't come out,
mm-hmm.
not because he's
afraid or anything.
No, not because he's afraid, not because he's being used all the time, but because of what Heimdall did when he sent him back. He didn't send him back with a weapon, he sent him back with dark magic. And when he sent him back with dark magic, it's the same effect that it had on Thor when Thor was sent back to the same thing.
Ah, so you think it could have stripped him of the ability to become Hulk?
Well, no, not stripped him, but the fact that he felt humiliated by losing the Thanos.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, he was sent back as through that shit as the Hulk, and the Hulk experienced an immense, beyond immense amount of pain. He never wants to come back out again.
Kind of like erectile dysfunction for Hulk.
But so the reason I say that is because the only way Hulk is going to really come out is if he's extremely angry.
Extremely angry or extremely confident.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So
extreme anger.
Yeah.
What could cause that? It's going to have to be the death of Black Widow.
Probably.
Or something weird. I just want the scene where the Hulk is holding the mountain, and he's like, you know the comic book cover I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're
talking about. All the Avengers, and then one little sliver, and the Hulk is holding an entire.
Yeah.
It's so cool. I just want that to happen. Please let that happen. Marvel. but I like that theory that the Hulk's going to have a big impact on Thor, you know what I'm saying, one way or another. And if they just go full Professor, or if they just go full Gray, I would love to see Gray Hulk.
Yeah.
Can this be the time where we get Gray Hulk? Or because Hulk's going to come back bigger and better when that's going to be the pop of the movie.
Yeah.
It's his final transformation.
I say,
what is it going to be?
I say, Bruce is going to watch. Like you said, Bruce is going to watch Thanos probably impale or kill Black Widow,
and this is going to pop.
Yeah.
And he's going to be
a world breaker.
What if with the Reality Stone he splits the two?
Oh shit!
Comic style. And you just have raw id Hulk. He's just punching anything he can get his hands on because he doesn't have Banner to hold him back.
I want Worldbreaker, man. That's what I want.
Worldbreaker is a problem.
I know. Put him on Titan.
Just drop him on Titan.
Yeah, exactly.
Let him do his thing. Wait for him to tucker himself out.
Watch Thanos.
Yeah.
Fucking shit his pants every which way to Sunday.
Warrior Hulk is one of the best books because he's smart as shit and he's calculated.
Yeah.
And he figures everyone out. Like he defeats. Okay, I'm sorry, I have to get on a tangent. My favorite moment of Warrior Hulk is where Ghost Rider comes to town. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh shit, Ghost Rider, dude. Like no one has ever legit beaten Ghost Rider. Like,
right.
And Ghost Rider shows up and they're like, okay, this is our secret weapon. He's going to be able to stop the Hulk. Ghost Rider rolls up to the Hulk, looks him dead in the face, gives him a penance stare, and just gets back on his bike. And Doctor Strange is like, what are you doing? Why don't you just stop him? He's right there. He's destroying New York. And Ghost Rider looked Doctor Strange dead in the face and said, his vengeance is justified. And it's the coolest moment in comics.
I mean, it's true.
It was because super true. It's
because of what they did to him.
The motivation for Worldbreaker doesn't exist in this universe.
Right. Yeah, I know.
Because there's no cabal. There's no secret way to get him to Sakaar.
Right.
Because
he was already on
Sakaar. Already on his way.
Yeah.
It was an accident.
Yeah.
It's not like... Oh, Tony programmed that ship just to go into space.
Right. Yeah.
Which could be possible because Tony had that thing, you know, hooked up from here to Epcot Center.
Well, it was, remember, Nature Ultron, he sent himself away.
Yeah.
Hulk sent himself, yeah.
He did the programming and
yeah.
And just turned off the communicator and he was just going up.
Which I've always had a problem with that, but
yeah.
Whatever. Anyway.
It's not like the thing was on autopilot, because why wouldn't it just go home?
Yeah.
Why is the thing on autopilot into the blackness of space? Unless he wanted it to go there.
Right.
You know, like it would just go back to the house. That part didn't make sense. There's a lot of parts of Age of Ultron that didn't make sense. So let's get into what I wanted to talk about earlier, speaking of Age of Ultron. In the end of this movie, and this pisses me off so much, it made me so mad watching it because I wanted it. Is they're doing the credit scene and they're having all these cool miniatures of the movie. They have cool miniatures of all the major scenes of Ant-Man falling into the ocean, the quantum realm machine, them running, wasp shooting stuff. And I'm like, I want that playset so bad. Like, it looks so cool. I just want one of the dioramas. And they're like face perfect. And I know it's CG and I know it's not a real thing. But why tease us, Marvel? And they did the same thing in Age of Ultron, where it had this beautiful, almost like marble statue of all the Avengers fighting Ultron bots.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I am dead.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. And Well, my one of my favorite ones was with Vision, when he was destroying all the I guess Ultronites.
Yeah, the Ultron Bites.
Yeah,
the small ones.
Yeah,
and it's the most coolest diorama like statue I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, Marvel's gonna put that out. It's gonna cost $2,000 or $4,000, but someone's gonna buy it. That means I could buy it. And it never came out. I was like, I am sure that this statue is gonna come out because it looks so cool.
Yeah.
Even outside of Age of Ultron, that's just a cool visual.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, no, it never came out. And then I saw this on the screen. I'm like, why do you do this, Marvel? You know, people want to buy that. It's the coolest thing ever. I just want the Wasp diorama where she's like throwing the giant like thing of the giant Pez dispenser. Can I have it? No, because you guys are selfish bastards, and your marketing department is the best and worst thing in the world. So, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Normally, I would do a 0 to 5 rating on this film, but it's hard to judge Marvel movies in the great pantheon of film because they don't really fit. You can't put this against Raging Bull. You know what I mean? You almost have to judge it against its peers.
You have to judge it within its own anthology. If you compare this to another Marvel movie, even other Marvel movies, like, you can't compare this to Deadpool.
No.
You can't compare this really to anything else.
No, because it just doesn't fit.
No.
You can't compare this to, like, Mission Impossible or Poltergeist or anything. It has to be within its own class.
Yeah.
So if we were to rank this amongst the MCU movies, where would you rank this?
See, that's even harder because I don't think it's the worst film.
It's not. It's not.
It's somewhere in the middle.
It's somewhere, and that's my biggest problem with this movie. It's meh.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's very. It does what it needs to. It does what it says it's going to do, which is entertain you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really add anything to the story, which is fine. It adds to Ant-Man's mythos, and that's fine. But we got to get out the brain. We got to get out the thought process of that this is a soap opera. And this is another episode
of the show. It's more like a filler.
It's a Gaiden, you know?
Yeah.
It's a side story that happened on a day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And just so happened in the day where most everyone died.
Yeah, just so they can have that tie-in.
Yeah.
Because if this was happened in phase one, it would have not had that. You know, it just would have been its own story. Kind of like Iron Man or Thor or Captain America, the First Avenger.
Which I think would have been worse.
Can you imagine if Ant-Man came out in phase one?
It wouldn't have worked. Thor was, I didn't like Thor that much.
Thor almost ruined the whole thing.
Yeah, I really didn't like Thor. But but
Kenneth Branagh.
That being said, I didn't mind Thor.
Mm-hmm.
But with this film,
it's not the best, it's not the worst.
I think it serves its purpose. I think it serves its purpose as filler, so I can't knock it for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't going in expecting a whiz-bang time. An epic time. I wasn't expecting that. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I wasn't expecting that. But,
It was
so the fact that it didn't take risks, it didn't, it was more like a kind of a feel-good movie until the very last
2 seconds part.
Yeah, then it makes it like, that's a WTF movie, but.
Right.
I think.
This movie was going to a restaurant you've been to 100 times and know what kind of meal you're going to get.
Until you get food poisoning.
Until you get food poisoning at the very end and you get home and you've already eaten it.
Yeah.
You know, not to say that the ending is bad.
No, not bad. It's just kind of rough. Punch in the gut. Like,
yeah, you get indigestion. Let's just say you got indigestion after eating your nacho platter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this movie's dead center. It's not as bad as Thor, the Dark World.
Yeah.
But it's not better than, let's say, Winter Soldier or any of the heavy hitters on the top. So it's really middle ground.
Yeah.
I had a good time. I laughed. I didn't laugh at certain times. And it was fine. It was fine. If I had to give it a number, it would be like a 2.5 out of 5.
Damn, bro. Like a 2.5
out of 5. That's half.
I know, but I mean, come on. It wasn't that bad.
Okay.
It wasn't that bad.
If you had to bend my arm a 3, a solid 3.
Okay, that's fair.
3 out of 5. It didn't blow my mind like Infinity War, but I wasn't bored.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I got to see one of my favorite characters in action. I got to see Ghost, which is always fun.
Yeah.
Now they just bring out Blizzard in Living Laser and the rest of those Iron Man villains, I'll be happy.
But I gave it a 2.65.
See? It's worse than mine. And I had to recant on my decision
because you said 2.5.
I was going to go 2.5, like solid.
Okay. I say 2.65. What I would have given the same that you gave at first, but the reason why I didn't is because I really, really, really liked the beginning part of that movie.
I love the beginning. If they just would have kept that going, I would have been so happy.
Yeah.
Because I love lineage just as a, like, I love the idea of it, the mantle being passed, and I want to see more of that 80s Marvel. I want to see more 80s MCU.
Yeah.
I want to see the Captain Americas in between Captain America, because we know that happens in the comics.
Right.
There are other Captain Americas that happen in between Steve going into the ice and him thawing out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'm really curious. That's when you can do U.S. Agent.
Mm.
You can throw him into the 80s like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's hopefully something they can. And we're getting more of that because, in a weird way, because Captain Marvel takes place in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they're bringing back a lot of dead characters like Rowan the Executioner.
Right.
And a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy guys.
Yeah. Jimon Honsu.
Jimon Who? Right. So we're getting a lot of that. So I like to see.
But is there a specific reason why it's being set in the 90s?
Because they want to give an explanation. It's the Mary Sue problem. Where Captain Marvel is going to be the end-all, be-all of Marvel comics in the movies. Her name is Captain Marvel. She's going to be the new flagship,
mm-hmm.
Strong female characters. Captain Marvel is going to be the next Iron Man. That's what they want. Because Tony and Cap, they're going to be golden age. Whatever happens at 4, that's mm-hmm. the end of their story.
Right.
She's going to be the face going forward. So they have to Mary Sue her, so where she's like, oh, she's been here the whole time. Mm-hmm. They're going to century her.
Right.
Whereas like,
that makes sense. So basically they're just retconning her in MCU.
They're going to retcon her to be there the entire time.
Yeah.
And that Nick Fury has had...
has had contact with her the entire time.
Yeah, has been in contact with her the entire time. And she is the Code Red.
Mm-hmm.
She is the Earth is in Peril
problem solver. Which is what you see in Infinity War.
And that she is been the ambassador for the Kree Empire this entire time, the human ambassador, so to speak, taking care of space shit because she's way too powerful just to keep her on Earth all the time because she have nothing to do.
Yeah,
because we're over here stopping, you know, before the invasion, we're over here stopping bank robbers and bullshit. That's beyond, she's beyond that kind of problem. So go in space, do whatever you need. When we need you, we'll call you.
Yeah.
And she's been in space kind of like a Green Lantern this whole time, training and getting more powerful, and this is going to be her origin story, saying that she's been here before Tony.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they're going to make her the end-all, be-all to Marvel. Is that, yeah, she's the answer, you know, other than a Silver Surfer, but then he's the problem when he first shows up. Well, they're going to have to tackle that when they get there. But, yeah, that's why it's in the 90s.
Right.
Because they have to make her infinite, literally, and it's like, oh, yeah, she's been here forever. If you had to make a beer out of Ant-Man and the Wasp, how do you think it would taste? What would you put in it?
I'd definitely make it into a lager. That so it's like nice. Lang Lager.
Say that five times fast.
Yeah, I already can't.
Can't do it.
Yeah, and it would actually be... a super duper high ABV lager in a very, very small shot.
Yes. A bullet.
it'd be one of the strongest lagers you've ever had in your life.
Yes.
That literally is like a shot.
You take it
but
down,
it's still a lager.
It's small but packs a big punch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I want three of them and just die. If you drink five of them, you just go to the quantum
realm. Yeah, exactly. If you drink three of them, you're in the quantum realm.
But you end up in that time vortex. Where can we find you, Darren?
You find me on YouTube, Beer Business Bureau. You find me on Facebook, Beer Business Bureau. Find me on Twitter, Beer B Bureau. And on Instagram, Beer Business Bureau.
Find this man. He is a beer connoisseur. He has been to the beer realm and fought Beer Dormammu, and they came to a bargain. He came back a powerful man. He'll tell you about it. He said, stout Mormongu, I've come to bargain.
Stormammu,
I've come to bargain. And he died 1,000 deaths. But he won, though. He came out with that Woot Stout. He had that beer dimension Woot Stout. You think our beer is strong?
Yeah, I know, man. Because within each of those Woot Stouts is a tiny bit of that time stone.
It's distilled. What you do is you just drop the Infinity Stone into the whole entire like vat. You let it, let it marinate for days. So the beer starts to take the qualities of that stone. And the beer stone, which is the brown jewel within the Infinity Gauntlet, keeps you in a nice little buzz forever. I want half the universe to be buzzed now.
It gives you immunity to pain.
Yep, you can't feel nothing. But you still get injured, though.
Yeah.
So once you remove the gem, you're just in a beautiful amount of pain, like in Hellraiser. Oh, man. If you've liked this episode, then please join our Patreon, because this is probably where you're listening to it. At the extremely Ant-Man-sized price of $5 a month, you can be able to listen to all of our exclusive content, which includes MLTM reviews, MLTN Top 10s, and MLTN Plays. You can always find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and Spotify. Pretty much anywhere within the Nine Realms, you can possibly find a copy of this podcast. I've been Michael. You've been great. Or Mike G, for that matter. Only my mom calls me Michael. And that's when she's mad. And I will always ask you to look towards the skies.
But don't get stopped in the quantum realm.
Don't stop in the quantum realm while you're in the skis, because you'll get stuck in the skis.